Dr. John Warwick Montgomery says, "A secular world desperately needs thinking, rational Christians." This month, read more from Dr. Montgomery and other experts on science and theology by subscribing to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's The Lutheran Witness. Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness for a special offer of $6.99 for 6 issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/trylutheranwitness.
Every time you see the argument for gender neutrality or completely sex-blind treatment of men and women, you wind up seeing women get the short end of the stick.
The Supreme Court created themselves the National Abortion Control Board because they control abortion law, they control abortion doctrine, they control abortion policies.
Why have we neglected hundreds and hundreds of years of heritage in our churches? Why do we sing garbage? Instead, we have paint-by-numbers pictures of Jesus playing wiffle ball with the kids.
If the church is going to survive where it will survive, because it will survive, it will do so on the forgiveness of sins.
This is Stan in Carson City, Nevada, and I just love listening to Issues Etc. while I'm vacuuming floodwaters out of the game room in my home.
Well, it's planned for tomorrow. I haven't seen a lot of hoopla about this yet. Not near as much as there was for the Women's March that happened right after the Trump inauguration. But this was the planned follow-up, a day without women, a strike, so it's being called. And, well, I think the only coverage I've seen is that the planned closing of 3 schools in the area will be or at least a tentative plan to close 3 schools, because the school's going to be undermanned, or in this case, underwomaned for the Day Without Women strike. Again, what they are striking, what grievance they have. Apparently, teachers don't have that kind of grievance with their schools. They would not go to school. They do. They do have, in many places, a union to air those grievances with. So what is this about, this political event, a feminist strike against what, and what will be the effect of it, especially for those kids who are sitting in school or, in some cases, not going to school that day? Greeting and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Live on this Tuesday afternoon, March the 7th, we'll be talking with Joy Pullman about the canceling of schools for feminist protest. A little later, we'll talk about stay-at-home moms with a college education. Anna Mussman will be our guest. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us for part 5 of our series on Lutheran identity. We'll talk about the means of grace. That's a phrase that Lutherans use, not often used outside Lutheran circles. Dr. Gifford Grobeen joins us to discuss love, sex, and fulfillment from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And then Dr. Al Mohler will round everything off. We're going to be talking with him about the proposal from President Trump to preserve federal funding for Planned Parenthood. In fact, maybe even support a little extra funding for Planned Parenthood if the largest abortion provider in the United States, Planned Parenthood, simply stops performing abortions. We can learn a lot from the proposal, but also from Planned Parenthood's almost instantaneous and predictable reaction. We'll talk about that with Dr. Al Mohler, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, in the last 15 minutes of Issues Etc. You can join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joy Pullman joins us to talk about canceling school for feminist protests. She's managing editor of The Federalist and author of a recent column titled 11 Problems with Teachers Shutting Down Schools for the Women's Strike. Joy, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hello, thank you.
What kind of got you going on this? What about the plans for this Day Without Women's strike first caught your attention?
It was the notice about a couple of schools closing. I had, you know, I basically got some email traffic about it from some ladies whose kids are in the district. And, you know, some of them were saying, oh, you know, what am I going to do? I need to find childcare in 2 days. You know, that's really not going to be convenient. I'm a working mother, so on and so forth. And so I know, you know, the child care, the family interaction with school is a real talker. You know, people really care about, you know, the way that schools affect the way that they run their lives. And so I started looking into it, and it you know, was becoming a growing theme online, on Twitter, on social media as well.
All right, let's talk about some of the reasons. Well, the school closings are probably going to be the ones that affect most people. You actually predicted this when we talked to you about the plans for the Day Without Women's strike, and you said it would affect hospitals and it would affect schools. Do the schools actually have to close?
Well, that's kind of an open question. So so far, all we've seen is two school districts, relatively moderate-sized school districts, one outside of D.C. in Alexandria and one in North Carolina around the Chapel Hill area, have announced they're going to close for Wednesday, that the day that the women's strike happens. And each of them have about 12 to 14,000 students, so, you know, moderate-sized. But actually what I think is the most striking about this is that more school districts aren't closing, because there's 14,000 school districts in the United States, and so only two are closing, and three-quarters of public school employees are women. The vast majority of K-12 teachers are women. So if this women's strike really were a bigger thing, we ought to be seeing more movement on this, and we really haven't.
I think I've seen notice about three schools tentatively planning to close, but of course, even in this area down here in the St. Louis area, that's a very small number. Do you expect it to have a big impact?
No, I don't. And the other, even in the schools that are closing, the few that are closing for this event, I kind of ran the numbers. I went and got their data from the federal, from the Federal Register of School Statistics, and I calculated I called up one of the PR folks for one of the school districts, and he was telling me, well, we're expecting to lose about 20% of our staff, you know, so we weren't sure that we could really get kids to school, we could safely take care of them, and that's why we decided to close. And so when I ran the numbers, though, you know, what I found is that the average class size in those two closed districts, with 20% of their employees gone, it would change from a ratio of about 12 to 13 kids per teacher to about 15 or 16 kids per teacher, even at 20% capacity. So you still, you know, technically, I know you can't just, you know, you can't just take the second graders all, if say one second grade teacher is gone, you can't just take her kids and give them to all the other teachers that day necessarily, or multiply that by bus drivers and all the other teachers. But I think it really shows just the fact that, I mean, what we've known for a long time is that our public schools have employed a lot of people. The ratios of teachers and staff to students are very high.
You say that a strike, this kind of strike planned, especially with regard to our schools, harms innocent bystanders. Who are you talking about?
The children. So a lot of people don't know this, but there actually has been emerging research that has shown for some time now, and you know, more detailed work is beginning to be done, that shows even if a teacher is gone for one day, the kids are learning less. So, of course, over the time that a child is in school, the average is that the kids lose 6 months of learning, you know, over accumulated teacher absences over the 12, 13 years that they're in K-12 schooling. And so, you know, that's a substantial amount of learning for children. That's a whole half, you know, more than half a year of public education, of schooling. And so research, again, has even just shown that a teacher being out sick for one day, you know, I mean, because we all know, everyone knows, the kids know, and you know from your own school days, when a substitute teacher is there, you know, you're very unlikely to get a really good teacher who has been in touch with, you know, the missing teacher, who knows what the lesson plan is and can just fill right in pretty seamlessly. Usually you're probably just going to be, you know, doing worksheets or watching movies or doing some completely random make work thing. So, you know, when their teacher is gone, kids aren't learning. And so when teachers are out of the class, you know, their political protest is having a negative effect on the kids that, you know, they claim to be protesting on behalf of.
Should taxpayers be concerned about how this is using or misusing the money that goes for education?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, another little known fact, but that's kind of surprising when you hear about the actual numbers, is that teacher absences are relatively high compared to other similar white-collar educated person professions. So teachers tend to have an absentee rate that is slightly about 1 point higher. You know, the average absentee rate is about 3.5% in white-collar professions. For teachers, it's closer to 5%. And there's some argument, of course, about why that is, but whatever the reason is, it would be good for taxpayers to get to the root of that. because, you know, again, the teacher absences not only are hurting the education of kids in the classroom, but also, you know, taxpayers not only have to pay for the teacher's salary when she's gone, but they also have to pay $60 to $100 typically per day for a substitute teacher to be there. So multiplied across, you know, thousands of absences per year, you have millions and millions of dollars you're going to substitute teachers, you know, that if we could just cut that half a point, 1%, that will be millions saved for taxpayers every year.
You say that the day without a woman strike also entrenches first world privilege. What do you mean?
Well, you know, some of the ladies I was talking with who were scrambling to find childcare for their kids were pointing out is that basically the type of person who can just leave work for a day and not lose her job, not have any negative repercussions, not have to scramble to find childcare or, you know, quit work for a day herself to watch her own kids while she's not earning money. So ladies who have that comfortable of a life situation are really lucky, and they're, you know, unusual. They're privileged, you know, people. So I don't really like to get into the whole, like, white privilege, rich privilege game, but if we're, even in terms that lefties like to use, you know, this protest, I think, is really a way to reinforce the fact that some ladies' lives are a lot easier than other ladies' lives, and this protest is really geared towards the ladies whose lives are easier to get a day off, to go maybe get their nails done, to take some selfies. But what is it really doing, you know, for the least among us? It's not really clear that it's doing anything.
Is it sending them a message? I mean, women who know that if they, without being sick, without a valid excuse, so to speak, just said, I'm not coming into work, would run the risk of either some kind of dark mark on their record or losing their job. Does it send those women in America a clear message?
Right. Well, and in fact, the women strikers posted on their website something about how, well, we know that some women's jobs are more at risk than ours, because actually 7 out of the 8 women on kind of the steering committee that put this together, they're academics. So they have tenure. They are not going to lose their job. You know, academics can, professors can often just cancel their classes for a day with no negative job repercussions. It's part of their contracts, and it's very similar for teachers, K-12 teachers. So these are folks who have job perks that most of us don't have. We can't just not show up to work one day. And so they said in online, well, we know that some women, if they do this, they are facing greater risk than we are. But basically, well, we think that it's worth it for them to make that sacrifice. And if you're one of the women whose jobs are not, you know, is secure, maybe people need you more than people need a teacher, right? If you are an emergency room nurse and you don't show up, you know, literally, you know, people could die, right? So some people's jobs are obviously more crucial than other people's jobs. So if you're one of those professions, those high-risk professions for a variety of reasons, having someone just tell you, well, it's worth the sacrifice, well, it's easy for them to say, they're not the one whose job is really on the line.
Does the woman strike, does it show proper respect for women who are not inclined to strike or aren't interested at all in the cause?
I actually don't think it does. You know, so we have one of the curious contradictions about feminism is that it claims to speak for all women, and then when it does, it disagrees with the things that, you know, half, majority, or a large minority of women actually think. You know, representative, of course, is the issue of abortion, but there's lots of these other issues on which lots and lots of women just agree. You know, that's the way that people are on big issues. Lots of people have good faith disagreements. And so just to say, to pretend that you can represent all women, you know, for any reason, it's just kind of ridiculous. You know, women are more than their body parts, and we express that every day by making different choices about any variety of things. So I just think, you know, there's no way for feminist, you know, movements, for women's marches, women's strikes to really represent all women. They keep telling us that this is what they're doing, but, you know, in reality, what they do is only what is humanly possible to do, which is represent basically one side, one side of a particular issue. So I don't feel very well represented by these women who are claiming to speak on my behalf. You know, I disagree with them on basically all of their major points, the reasons that they say that they're marching. And I also just, in terms of tactics, I find it kind of offensive to suggest that I am less of a woman, I'm not a good woman, if I don't express my displeasure at certain nebulous public policies, you know, by leaving my little children, my husband, and my employer in the lurch, for me to go, you know, sit out and, again, paint my nails or do whatever I feel like doing.
Does this, in a sense, tip the hand of what everybody knows to be true, and that is the rather stark partisanship of public education?
Right. I think it does that as well. We hear all the time, and so I follow state education policy for, you know, a number of years now, and you will see over and over when you read, you know, local news articles, state news articles, politicians and bureaucrats from all sides will very frequently say something like, well, it, you know, education is nonpartisan, or we all want what's best for the kids, or, you know, this isn't really a political issue. Education is apolitical, all those sorts of things. And now I, after having seen that as a very constant theme over the years, I have learned to either kind of laugh or know that there's something. As soon as someone says it's apolitical, I know that it's very deeply political, because I think the apolitical charge is just a way to kind of, how do you say it, get more agreement without actually having done the work to earn the agreement, to actually work through disagreements people might have. So with the Women's March, what we basically see, it's kind of the same thing with the feminism thing, you know, claiming to speak for all Americans, you know, or claiming to speak for all women on either the issue of education or the issue of women's quote-unquote policies or issues. That just really can't be done because Americans have lots of different ideas. So there have been a lot of organizing. You know, there's been folks using their schools to organize to get women to participate in this event. And I think it's just another example of how we need to stop believing that nice-sounding but just false idea that education can be nonpartisan. You know, education, the way that you teach a child is going to relate to your deepest ideas about what a human is. We know whether, you know, whether humans are naturally good, whether they're naturally evil, and therefore how much government and how much direction, teaching, guidance from adults they need in their life. And so that's going to change. It should change how you educate a child. And that, of course, also has political implications.
What does closing a school or a teacher staying off from work because of the Day Without a Woman strike, what does it teach girls about being a woman?
One of the curious things that I found when just kind of looking to get a handle on what's going on for this strike, I found a group of girls in a New York school, high school girls, who said that their form of protest for the day, they don't want to skip school, but they're going to spend the whole school day sitting in class and not saying anything. And so I just thought to myself, well, there's a way to kind of contradict a woman's liberation. you know, whatever you think about feminists, you know, one thing that the movement has done is pushed little girls to be more proactive about their education, to focus more on the career and what education might do for them on that front. And it's counterproductive for little girls, you know, who are supposedly going to get that education to use the freedoms that some feminists have gotten us by basically sitting back and saying, I'm not going to participate in my own advancement and my own education.
It's only a day away. Do we know what this strike is about? I still am very unclear, as unclear on that as I was when it was first announced.
There are a list of what they call unity principles that were published on the website, and they're just basically a laundry list of progressive ideas about public policy. So, but you're right. It is really nebulous. You know, there are the things like, you know, gender justice. Well, what does gender justice mean? Right, that's a completely vague term. You have to apply it to something. You know, but when you come down to it, when you look at what people are saying on Twitter, on social media, and the press releases that the organizers put out, it's just generally kind of the litany of leftist public policy. You know, they want to de-sex bathrooms so that men wearing women's clothing can get into women's showers and other private facilities. You know, they want to have the government tell employers how much they have to pay women and men, and how they, you know, and what their parent leave, their maternity leave policies have to look like. So on and so forth. But some of them relate very directly to, you know, women's interest sorts of things. And some of them really, I mean, they're things like, immigration policy, so on and so forth, that don't really have a direct connection to something, you know, that directly benefits women as women. Of course, abortion is kind of a centerpiece of that. And I, as a woman, think that that's a direct assault on not only my womanhood, but of course, half of the babies who would be born without it.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of a recent column titled 11 Problems with Teachers Shutting Down Schools for the Women's Strike. You can read it and her other articles at The Federalist at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joy, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Anna Musson will join us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about stay-at-home moms and college education. If you paid for a college education for one of your daughters, and she said, you know, what I went to school for, I've decided I'm not going to do, at least for now, I'm going to stay at home and be a mom. Does that mean you've wasted your money and she's wasted her time? We'll answer that question with Anna Musson right after this.
I bet you didn't know that the teaching of Latin in schools is making a comeback. Latin? Really? Isn't that a dead language? Well, take a look at what studies say about how well Latin students do on a test like the SAT. Memoria Press's Latin program will revolutionize your students' vocabulary, knowledge, and their understanding of grammar. And there is no better subject for teaching critical thinking skills. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery dice, un mundo secular tiene necesidad profunda de cristianos pensativos y racionales. Este mes, lea más de Dr. Montgomery y otros expertos de las ciencias y la teología por suscribir a The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's The Lutheran Witness. Visite acph.org/trylutheranwitness para una oferta especial, 6 revistas mensuales por $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpretando a un mundo contemporáneo desde una perspectiva luterana.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
In Western societies where the most basic notions of right and wrong are not only denied but actively suppressed, recovering a biblical and distinctly Christian understanding of the natural law is absolutely essential.
Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Traditionally, Christians have understood that man is not born a blank slate just waiting to be programmed like a machine. We are moral creatures whose imaginations are darkened by sin. Yet every person still has a basic understanding of right and wrong because God has revealed it to us in his creation through natural law. Denying the vital role of natural law has grave consequences, not only for society, but for the church's crucial task of proclaiming the gospel.
You can meet and hear Aaron Wolf making the case for natural law Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org.